cherished and esteemed compatriots, I bid you all a warm welcome to this most blessed of sermons. As you are all acutely aware, the Imperium is beset upon all sides by the countless enemies of man, who would so gleefully watch us tumble into the void, simply to claim a single day as the false leader of our glorious stars. But we must remember that even though we have claimed this galaxy as our birthright, there was once a time long before that of the Emperor, where another species held utter sovereignty over this vast expanse. The ancient and terrible group which I am referring to is, of course, the Necrons. This malign race once walked atop their worlds in feeble bodies of broken flesh, but such was the plight of disease and fragility across their kin that they sought out a truly forbidden method to ascend into a new plane of power. Entering into a fated bargain with the primordial star gods, known as the Catan, the feeble Necrontyr underwent a process known as the biotransference, where they shed their ailing and infirm husks whilst transplanting their own consciousness into new frames of mighty living metal. Their new necrodermis bodies were true works of mechanical art. No longer would they be forced to endure the sickly trials of life, for they had now seized their most coveted prize of immortality, and not even the gods themselves would be able to resist their new imposed order. Despite their newfound venerability, in shedding their sapless bodies, the Necrons had unknowingly sacrificed their very souls to the deceitful Catan, who voraciously feasted upon the precious spirits which once shone so brightly within their pathetic frames. In response to this trickery, following on from the mythical war in heaven, the Necrons turned upon the ancient star gods, finally seeking some revenge for stealing the very sacred essence of their species. Some of the Catan were utterly destroyed, with their crimes being so great that they deserved naught but to be cast into the stellar winds as cosmic dust. Others, however, were seen as being too valuable to annihilate, and the lords of the Necrons knew that they could hold on to them as great tools for future use. As such, many of the Catan were shattered into innumerable shards, which were then captured and contained within the vast prisons known as Tesseract Labyrinths. From here, their powers and energies could be endlessly exploited and drawn from to fuel the transcendent technologies of the Necrons. In any case, whilst mighty, their species was still reeling from the war in heaven and from their liberation against the Catan. The Silent King therefore ordained that the Necrons should descend into their tomb worlds and enter into a state of hibernation, where they would only emerge once the galaxy had returned to a state of ignorant peace, at which point they would emerge once more to reclaim the stars and crown themselves as the ultimate rulers over the cosmos. This now brings us to the 41st millennium, where the tomb worlds have hummed into life and the undying legions have crawled their way out to the surface, once again feeling the grace of starlight upon their rusted frames. Over the long eons of slumber, the Necrons have lost much, with many of their kin being reduced to mindless or maddened husks, who know naught else but to bring death to any who they encounter. Despite this, however, there is one vital part of Necron society which has been conserved, and that would be their dynastic system. I have previously gone into much detail regarding this societal structure. However, I shall give another brief overview now before we delve deeper into this sermon. A Necron dynasty is a vestigial remnant of their species' old days as the biological Necrontyr. The esteemed houses were once seen as being the single most important of socio-political organizations which existed throughout their empire, and the ruling lords of their species would dictate the policies and strategies of their worlds from the heads of their great families. In the antediluvian era, where they still retained their bodies of flesh, the mighty pharaohs would order about their subservient followers and familial allies, all to bring some semblance of glory to their haughty clan. Following from the long sleep, however, the dynastic system has become somewhat twisted, and to the Necrons it now seems that there is simply nothing more vital than to expand one's own great house. All must now be loyal to one dynasty or another, and there is no room for neutrality in this great dance of intrigue within the stars. Because of their wealth and status in their ancient days, the lords and pharaohs were graced with the finest of necrodermis frames, which were only to be preserved in the most advanced of stasis chambers, meaning that their mental acuity is just as sharp as it once was in their biological age. The same, however, cannot be said for the lesser, more menial of Necrons. The endless legions of warriors are almost entirely reliant on basic neural circuits, and they must be directed by their overarching lord, for they are incapable of piecing together coherent thoughts or plans for themselves. As a result of this, the pharaohs at the heads of their dynasty will use their great armies to sweep the stars, simply seeing the lesser followers as being chattel warriors, who only serve to be used as pawns for the advancement of their royal family. This brings us to an important point, and it is that the dynasties are all to be considered as separate groups from one another. Whilst they may form alliances, or generally strive towards the same goals, it seems that for the overlords, that they primarily care about the flourishing growth of their own dynasty over anything else. This means that some of the families have been known to go to war with other houses simply to claim their territory, resources, or to resolve an ancient rivalry, which has remained as an archaic grudge since their biological age. In addition, the actual cultural practices of the groups are incredibly distinct from each other. Some may have a fervent interest in obtaining vast stores of wealth and riches, whereas others will be more war-oriented, choosing to dedicate their resources towards acts of glorious conquest over the lesser species of the galaxy. With these differences in mind, let us now explore some of the more notable dynasties which have been encountered throughout the cosmos. In my previous sermon, I went over the Sautek and Sarikan dynasties, since they are the two largest and most powerful of families which have reared their great metallic heads since emerging from the depths of their tomb worlds. But today, I shall attempt to reveal the mysterious and often horrifying secrets of some of the lesser dynasties at large today. So please, dear friends, I invite you to sit back and relax as we delve into the stories of the Necron dynasties. The first that I shall speak of is known as the Mefrit dynasty. There was a time long ago, in the bygone days of the galaxy, where the infamous Mefrit were amongst the most terrifying and most dreadful of houses which could be encountered. Even with the highly advanced technologies of the Necrons, this dynasty stood above the rest, as they had mastered a series of colossal weapons which were so mighty that they could be used to destroy the stars themselves. Such was the power of their armaments that the individuals who rose in status to the position of Silent King would always keep the pharaohs and lords of the Mefrit dynasty close at hand, and they would be lavished with the most extravagant of gifts to keep them loyal to their true sovereign. The reason the Silent Kings wished for the Mefrit to be such reliable allies was that, should it be required of them, then they would be used as the solar executioners of the Necron Empire. If there were any troublesome interlopers across the galaxy, no matter if it was from a Necron dynasty or from a lesser species, then the Silent Kings could dispatch the fleets of the Mefrit to station themselves in orbit around their world. All knew what the arrival of these ships would foretell, and so most would quickly throw themselves down at the yoke of the Silent King, begging them for forgiveness for their petulant crimes. Oftentimes, this was enough, and a hefty bounty of reparations would be accepted before the terrible fleet departed, slipping once more into the inky depths of space. For those who refused to bow their heads in resignation, however, they were to be graced with a gift which would forever change the face of the galaxy itself. The Mefrit would activate their ancient weaponry, with simply incomparable levels of power being drawn from their magnificent energy cells, until the craft was fully charged and aimed at the foolish troublemakers. From here, they would not target the world itself. Instead, they would levy their armaments against the life-giving star of their system, snuffing it out of existence in a horrific implosion, casting out great gravitational waves to reverberate through the known universe. At this point, the fate of the world would be sealed. Some species were forced to remain within their doomed homes, where they would simply freeze in the newfound oppressive darkness. Others, who found their worlds being situated ever so slightly too close to their star, would have been incinerated and reduced to cosmic dust by the outburst of energy from the Mefrit Doomsday attack. But no matter how it occurred, the entire planet would have been sentenced to death, and it would be a fate which none could find salvation from. It is said that this dynasty went on to expunge dozens or even hundreds of stars from existence, and some suspected that this wanton use of such a weapon was simply evidence of the hubris of the Necrons, who in their heyday could find none to match their power other than perhaps the gods themselves. In any case, the powers of the Mefrit were only truly appreciated by the Silent Kings, as the other dynasties would look upon them with a sense of disgust. There was no honor to be gained from defeating an enemy through this method, and even if their tactics were vital in ending great wars long before they began, it was still seen as a shameful way to enact their will upon reality. Nevertheless, despite their distaste towards their cousins, none would ever dare to speak out publicly against them. It was an unconscionable decision to make an enemy of the Mefrit, since the threat of seeing their ships appearing high in orbit around your star was simply too great to ignore. Despite this reverential position as being perhaps the most feared dynasty of all, Old Father Time seems to have a way of wiping the slate clean if given long enough. The great Pharaon of the Mefrit, known as Kerek the Eternal, did not live up to his namesake, as he was assassinated by a daring group of infiltrative Eldari, who bravely delved into the tombs of his crown world to slay him as he slept. In addition to losing their overlord, the creeping advances of time had decayed and ruined the great stellar weapons of the Mefrit, reducing them to being little more than ancient relics of an era long past. Despite now suffering through what can only be considered as their darkest period of dynastic history, the throne of the Mefrit is still a highly sought-after prize. Their territories still stretch out across an impressive expanse of Segmentum Ultima, with dozens of core worlds holding a veritable army of mindless warriors who will only serve the Lord who claims the title of leadership. In addition, The ancient stellar technology of this dynasty has been adapted and integrated into their smaller weapon systems, meaning that even the Gauss flayers of the lowliest warrior have been enhanced to an ever more powerful level. Many ambitious nobles who survived the Great Sleep are now vying for control over the entire dynasty, and a civil war of intrigue and deception is well underway across the tomb worlds. Their domain and state has also been noticed from the other dynasties of the galaxy, who are similarly keen to advance their own position by stealing away the remnants of the solar executioners for their own glory. We can only speculate as to which lord will ultimately be successful in their endeavors. For if the warships of Mefrit ever rise to prominence once more, then not even the stars themselves will be safe from their approach. The next to discuss is named as the Novok dynasty. Though they currently only rule over a comparatively small region of space in the northeastern fringes of Segmentum Ultima, the lesser races of the galaxy should be thankful that this family has not outstretched its bloody hands to sweep up whatever stars and worlds they can. It is unfortunate that out of all the cultural practices which were conserved from the days prior to the biotransference, that the Novok clung onto their propensity to shed blood above all else. For you see, even in those ancient days when their species still walked with their feeble fleshy bodies, the Novok had gained some level of infamy thanks to their obsession with enacting great blood rituals before each battle. They would take prisoners or simply gather up a bounty of slaves before culling them and adorning their warriors in a glorious washing of blood before charging out into war. From here, the bloodshed would not cease, and instead the Necrontyr would become unrelenting. Any slain foes would be torn asunder, and huge chasms would be filled with the bodies of their enemies, all of which would be used for enacting further blood rituals to honor their kin. As I have stated, it is regrettable that this sense of bloodthirsty necromania somehow survived deep within the neural circuits of the Necrons over the long slumber. It stands today that when the constructs of the Novok dynasty go to war, that they will initially appear as any other Necron force, with their dull metallic frames trudging through the muck of a battlefield. However, this state of normalcy will not last for long. As soon as the first drops of blood fall upon the barren ground, then the ancient engrammatic pathways within their neural cores will spring to life once more. From here, the urge to indulge themselves in the spilt blood of their foes becomes simply overwhelming to them. The soulless automata will rapidly advance, crashing themselves into the fleshy remains of those who have fallen, desperate to drain their blood and to adorn the viscera across their necrodermis frames. From here, the scent of hot, fresh blood only serves to invigorate the members of the Novok dynasty. And as the battlefield becomes ever more bloodstained, so too will the ferocity of the Necrons increase, seemingly restoring them to their old state of glory once more, unburdened by the weights of their archaic machinery. In order to best exploit this blood-sourced empowerment, the noble lords of the Novok have outfitted many of their common warriors with larger close combat weaponry, all so they can be more efficient in liberating the sanguine treasures from whichever enemy was foolish enough to stand against them. Whilst effective, these mindless constructs are nothing compared to the better preserved of Necron forces, who even in their days prior to the biotransference were true masters in the art of melee combat. As such, The mighty Lich Guard of the Novok are some of the deadliest which may be encountered throughout the galaxy, and it has been noted that they will often be equipped without their dispersion shields, choosing instead to wield twin hyperphase swords or even great two-handed war scythes. It should be no surprise to any of you that their activity often attracts the attention of the malign Flayed Ones, who will sense the gushing flows of crimson blood before manifesting themselves upon the battlefield to engorge themselves on the gruesomely macabre bounty. Rather surprisingly, however, the Novok have been known to intentionally subject their forces to succumb to the Destroyer curse, seeing the increased bloodlust brought about from the nihilistic loss of purpose as being a clear boon to their forces. Many would condemn actions such as this. For once a Necron has fallen prey to the cult, their ancient memories can never be recovered. And yet the lords of the Novok care not, for they would rather their armies be simple tools for spilling blood over anything else. The Faerun of this dynasty is known as Galmak the Moon Killer, and from his crown world of Dol Six, he has carved a true path of blood throughout the stars, with there being naught but bloody viscera and decayed detritus left in his wake. It is known that since the formation of the Great Rift, that in addition to waging a relentless war against the various orc tribes and human-controlled worlds of their region, that the Novok is also embroiled within a fierce conflict with the Tyranids. The Great Tendril, designated as Hive Fleet Arachni, is poised to consume the entire dynastic territory of Galmak. And so the Necron forces have become locked in a bitter conflict to purge these mindless bugs from their worlds. There are perhaps no Necrons who are more terrifying to face in battle than of the Novok dynasty. No mortal wishes to meet their fates, and yet the prospect of dying at the hands of a rabid machine who seeks to only rip and tear your sacred body apart is nothing short of nightmarish. Now it is time for us to learn of the Nephrek dynasty. Ruling from a region slightly northwest of the galactic core, this house is widely considered to be one of the wealthiest of the great dynasties to have endured the long sleep. Thanks to being situated in such a densely packed stellar region, in the heyday of the Necrons, the Nephrek were able to seize control of dozens of incredibly valuable worlds, which were seemingly overflowing with an abundance of resources. In addition to the worlds themselves, the stars which fell within their dynastic territories were also seen as true jewels to be refined and utilized. The advanced technologies of the Nephrek were used to capture enormous stores of the solar energies emitted from the thousands of stars within the galactic core. And this was then transferred into vast battery storage units within their tomb worlds, meaning that many of their crypt complexes have survived in an immaculate state. Nevertheless, despite their riches, with the ending of the Great Slumber and the re-emergence of the Necrons, the nobles of the Nephrek found their worlds to be in a rather deplorable condition. Their capital crown world, known as Ariund, had been conquered by the opportunistic forces of the Altimhor dynasty, who had laid claim to this planet in the hopes that they could enslave the imperial colonizers who had formed a flourishing community on its surface. An important point to note here is that Ariund orbited a trinary star system, and the diverse spectra of electromagnetic energy given off from the three suns was something which both Imperial agents as well as Necron technomancers desperately sought after. As such, the Imperials had formed rather crude solar farms to harvest trace amounts of the stellar radiation, but this truly paled in comparison to the levels of energy which the Necrons could reap with their advanced technologies. Seeing the presence of the foolish dregs of man, The members of the Nefrek were intent on purging not only the mortal pests, but also the foolish Altimhor Necrons who thought that they could silently lay claim to worlds which were already held under the dominion of another. As I have mentioned, the crown world of Eriand was incredibly rich, and this wealth had been used to rapidly build up the great tomb complexes to a truly glorious level. They were replete with the finest of stasis chambers, many of which were comparable to those found upon the vast capital ship of the Sarikan dynasty. But despite this, they were not perfect. The Nefrek Feren, a Necron known as Silphek, had descended into one of these grand stasis crypts with the expectation that it would preserve him in a perfect state. And yet, time ever has a way of altering even the best of plans. The great lord awoke with his body completely intact, being just as marvelous as it had been from the first moment of biotransference, and yet his mind was grossly affected. We cannot say that the Pharaon was mentally ruined or driven to madness in the way that a destroyer cultist would be, but there was one notable and significant change to his personality. As he emerged from the great crypt, he looked out upon the vast trinary stars of his system, and their blazing glow simply ensnared him in a sense of cosmic fascination. The Lord saw them as being not simple stars, but as near holy symbols of his dynastic might, which he had to protect at any cost. As such, seeing the scheming members of the Altimhor claiming his precious stars was something which could not be forgiven. He led a vast army out from the tomb, driving out the rival Necrons from this world once and for all. Whilst on his warpath, he also annihilated the dreadful imperial structures and outposts, which to him seemed to be naught but a blight upon this most sacred of worlds. With the capital once again under dynastic control, the Nefrek have further delved into the powers of their trinary system, using the great bounty of energy to fuel their esoteric and harrowing technologies. Much of this solar power is used to charge up great doomsday weapons, which are so powerful that some have suggested that they may rival the great star killers of the old Mefrit dynasty. As I had stated, the Pharaon Silphek had been driven into a state of manic obsession with the three stars, and after many weeks of gazing directly into their majesty, he sought out a method of forever intertwining himself with their beautiful glow. The great cryptics of his dynasty were tasked with producing a unique material known as metagold, which was then transfused into his necrodermis frame as something of a second skin. This strange sheath holds a unique ability in that those who have embraced its cover can transform their entire bodies from one of metal into becoming a being of pure starlight. From here, whilst in their dazzling form, they can instantly cross vast distances, seemingly teleporting themselves to any corner of a world in but a flash. Obtaining this ability has only furthered the great delusions of Silphek to the point where he now believes himself to be something of a stellar god. And perhaps within his muddled and corrupted neural circuits, he would see his current form as being more magnanimous than of even the ancient Catan. With that being said, Silphek, if indeed divine, would be considered as a graceful god, as he has bestowed the gift of metagold onto his subordinate dynastic members. Lesser lords will stride into battle before blinking into a blinding flash of light, appearing amidst an enemy battle line to bring blazing havoc to their foes. Even the minor warriors of the Nefrek have been blessed with a modified version of this material, allowing them to similarly teleport about a battlefield with great bursts of starlight. Because of this technology, Their ancient frames now no longer appear to resemble that of the other Necron houses, as they shine with a dazzling ochroid glow, fit only for the servants of a golden star god. The final family to discuss in this sermon shall be the Nihilak dynasty. Being situated in the southeastern fringes of Segmentum Ultima, they have earned themselves a reputation as being incredibly stable, with their military forces often being deployed exclusively for defensive operations within their dynastic territories. In their prime, the Nihilak actually controlled a vast swathe of the galaxy, with hundreds of stars falling under their domain, and yet the ceaseless advancement of time seems to have changed all this. Over the 60 million years of dormancy, the lesser species of the galaxy, ignorant to the existence of tomb worlds, had rapidly moved in to colonize and conquer the planets of this region, with many mighty bastions and fortifications being erected for the glory of their own respective empires. This advance was so great that once the nobles of the Nihilak finally awoke, they were clutched with the fear that their entire dynastic holding would be soon overrun, and that their prestigious history would simply be cast away, forgotten to even their fellow Necrons. As such, they sent out a directive to the lesser lords that they should abandon the fringe worlds and centralize their military forces around the capital crown world of Gaiden. Whilst this initially caused a great deal of stress and distrust amongst the lords, who feared that they would never again walk upon their old homeworlds, this tactic proved to be the saving grace for the entire dynasty. With their armies now built up around Gaiden, the great Pharaon known as Krispec collected his royal court together and ordained that every available resource from their ancient vaults should be used to empower their military so that they could go out and reclaim the stars from their enemies. Their warriors, newly equipped with some of the finest of weapons, were able to effortlessly repel the various attacks from the lesser species of this region, who were seemingly powerless to fight against the undying legions of the Nihilak. A simple victory was not enough to sate the appetites of the nobles, who could only gain some satisfaction if they utterly annihilated their enemies, all in recompense for their great territorial losses. In any case, the great legions then set out through the stars with a vast fleet, recapturing the most powerful and strategic of worlds from their old dynastic reach. Despite their success, however, they did not wish to overextend themselves and risk losing that which they so painfully reclaimed. Many fringe worlds were abandoned, with huge amounts of resources being pledged instead to defending the newly captured planets, all so that their enemies could never again infringe upon their territories. Gigantic defensive pylons were erected across the various worlds, forming an energy grid which could repel and disrupt any foolish invaders who may wish to banish the metallic constructs. As it now stands, the Nihilak have fortified their small region of space into becoming a near impenetrable bastion against the lesser species of the galaxy. To outsiders, the planets which were conquered may seem somewhat random or confusing. However, to the Necrons, this has all been part of a grand plan. For you see, there is an ancient relic possessed by the Nihilak dynasty, which provides them with a rather unique, predictive sense. The Pharaon has in his personal possession the preserved head of the Yith Seer, and it is from this strange artifact that the Necrons have gained a truly deep insight into the future of the galaxy. This head was taken from the last surviving prophet of an ancient alien race, which supposedly had an innate sense of premonition towards the future. Using the advanced technologies of the Necrons, They have enhanced this severed head with neurographic resonators which allow them to see far into the future and plan out their strategies based on what they have seen. It is unsurprising that this has given them an unmatched advantage over their enemies, since they have known exactly where to deploy their armies in order to counter any opportunistic attacks or rival uprisings. Perhaps as a result of this relic and of the foresight it grants them, the Nihilak have aligned themselves with the Silent King Zarek now that he has returned to the galaxy. Only time will tell to see if this gambit will pay off, but for the Pharaon Krispek, he is content to watch his dynasty carry out the directives of their new suzerain. There is a truly fascinating member of the Nihilak dynasty, who many of you may be somewhat familiar with, and it would be the overlord known as Trazin, the Infinite. He is the kleptomaniac ruler of the tomb world known as Solemnus, which has been formulated as perhaps the grandest gallery of historical artifacts throughout the entire galaxy. We could spend limitless hours discussing the myriad of exhibits and relics kept within its ancient halls, but I believe that shall be a topic for another day. In any case, the forces of the Nihilak dynasty have now adopted an incredibly isolationist stance towards the rest of the galaxy. They are content to simply defend their territories, and such is the scale of their fortifications, that it is doubtful that any lesser species would ever be able to effectively dislodge them from their homes. Blessed citizens, this shall now bring an end to our sermon. In the bygone days of the Necron Empire, back when they still stood as the broken Necrontyre, there were hundreds, perhaps even thousands, of distinct dynasties. However, since the long sleep, many of these have been simply lost to time. The four which I elected to share with you today are some of the more noteworthy and active of houses which we have encountered throughout the galaxy. But there are many more which we shall soon return to learn of. I do hope that you will all join me again for a future sermon regarding the various dynasties of the Necrons, for they are an endlessly fascinating topic, with some being so estranged and corrupted from the long sleep that they believe themselves to still be biological creatures rather than the horrifying machinations which they truly are. In any case, this will act as our conclusion. I wish you all a pleasant and peaceful day. But do remember that the soulless husks of the Necrons are to ever be kept at a distance, for they will gladly purge all biological life from existence if it means that they may bask in the ancient light of their empire. For but another day.